Well, good evening to each one. It's good to be here again this evening with you. I had to think as Brother Laban was talking, again, the church is really God's design. It's something beautiful, something he made. Not only just the natural world around us is beautiful, it's he designed the church as well. And can you imagine? We can be a part of that. I have some handouts here. Well, this evening I'd like to talk about the great flood and the destruction of God's original creation. And as we have time, we'll talk about some of the fossils in the fossil world. So it's a big subject that, again, put two subjects into one. And so I'm going to try to cram it in by 9 o'clock, so we'll give it a try. Maybe just one comment before we go a whole lot further. Think about the modern creation movement. It was sparked, I believe, in the 1960s, in the early 1960s. Doctors Henry Morris and John Whitcomb wrote the book, The Genesis Flood. I brought the book along. It's a book I've never read from cover to cover, but I have read in it. But it's a book that influenced not only, well, it influenced had a great influence on the Christian church and encountering evolution and to get people to think, you know, how did this really happen? Instead of just trusting the scientists, well, that's what they say, they're learned men, they've got it figured out. We talked about uniformitarianism last night. That's a concept by evolutionary science that the processes of erosion, sedimentation, rock layers, and volcanic activity took place in the past as the same rate as it does today. It's very slow and gradual and took millions and millions of years. So they would say the Earth is about 4.5 billion years old. If you go by the present rate of erosion, things like that. But to the serious-minded Christian, that's a dilemma, isn't it? How can you accept the truths that are in the scripture, the record there of about 6,000 years, and you have these scientists over here that promote billions of years? Obviously, you can't really have it both ways, can you? Well, there's a lot of people that tried, especially in the 1800s. It was kind of the popular thing to do, well, just trust the scientists. And then you try to fit the Bible into that. Of course, we know that doesn't work very well. Okay, if you look on your sheets, the first question there, can you help me out? What was the purpose of the flood of Noah's day? God, get an idea. It's a good time to just put a lot of water on the earth. Why did God do it?
Because of the wickedness.
Okay, because of the wickedness of man. It says there was imaginations were evil continually. And I think there was not just evil imaginations, but it was an anti-God mentality. As you think about the earth, at that time, You know, how many people were on the earth? Well, the Bible doesn't tell us, but it could have been up to 1 billion to 3 billion people. And that's kind of hard for us to think about. We don't maybe think about that being that many people. Let's see, I missed the... But God's focus went to one man, one family. I think to begin with, I'll just read a few verses from 2 Peter chapter 2. First of all, 2 Peter 2, 5. It says, "And God and spared not the old world, but saved Noah, the eighth person, the preacher of righteousness, bringing in the flood upon the world of the ungodly." In chapter 3, 2 Peter, "Knowing this first, that there shall come in the last days scoffers walking after their own lusts and saying, where is the promise of his coming? For since the fathers fell asleep, all things continue as they were from the beginning of the creation." So uniformitarianism. Everything takes long processes. "For this they are willingly are ignorant of, that by the word of God the heavens were of old, the earth standing out of the water and in the water, whereby the world that then was, being overflowed with water, perished." Okay, so just going to look. I guess there's a marker here. How many years was it from Genesis chapter 1 to Genesis chapter 5? So how many years was that, approximately? I don't know if I would have known it either, but it's around 1,656 years. And then comes Genesis chapter 6, it's about 9, and we have 1 year's time. Or approximately, it could have been a little more with Genesis chapter 9. It's about 1 year. Why did God, the author, or Moses, the writer, put so much emphasis on 1 year's time? Well, that's interesting to think about. I think God said, you know, this is important for everyone to know. That was about a quarter to a third of the world's existence of 6,000 years. And you think about the culture. It's one man, one family, out of perhaps billions of people. You think it's bad today. You know, I wonder if it wasn't worse then. And think about the pressure to conform. You know, everyone else is doing it. You know, Noah stood alone in a world that had forgotten God. And I'm not sure how that all was. I mean, it seems like surely there was someone else, but he was the only one that went on the ark with his family. It says, "Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord." Okay, the next question there. Well, I missed one question too there. Jesus compared the flood of Noah's day to what? So we looked at Peter. As Peter writes on, just a little further on, what does Peter write about? He said, there's a greater destruction coming. So he compares it with the last days. Jesus also did too in Matthew 24. Okay, was this flood a local flood or was it a global flood? Someone want to say? Okay, a global flood. Well, I'm going to make you think a little bit. You're telling me this is a global flood, and I believe it, because Genesis 7:19, it talks about all the high hills were covered. But what about Mount Everest? You know, Mount Everest is, what, 29,000 feet, 5.5 miles tall. Did the flood cover Mount Everest? Mount Hood, for comparison, is about 2 miles high. And there's only enough water on Earth to cover the Earth about 1.8 miles. So was there more water then? Well, I don't think so. Nothing new was created. Well, let's keep going on. Name three evidences of this supernatural event in Genesis chapter 11. What really happened in Genesis chapter 7? What does the Bible say? I think it's in verse 11. Does the Bible say the fountains of the deep were broken up? You know, I think there was earthquakes and volcanoes. The earth's crust just went upward. There's great uplifts. You know, Mount Everest, I think, I'm not sure it didn't know when to quit. You think about the hydraulic pressure of water. You know, well, the next thing is there, the windows of heaven were opened, and it rained 40 days, 40 nights. If we have a rain of about 3 days, we're saying, you know, when's this going to stop? And the rivers rise and floods and 40 days and 40 nights. So there was tremendous hydraulic pressure. And then another evidence would be, well, what do we see all over the earth today? Millions of dead things all over the earth. You can find them everywhere. Or not everywhere, but I went on a little walk today and went up just beyond Jeff's, there were some rocks that are falling down, and I tried to find a fossil, but I couldn't find any. But I'm sure you look at the some of the uplifts, that some of those rocks are like this, and some of them are about like this, those layers. That can only happen during a catastrophe. And these three things, I think, happened pretty well simultaneously. Well, maybe the fossils were formed a little bit later. Okay. I'm going to skip number six. There's a lot could be said there. What were some other supernatural happenings surrounding this event? What about the design of the ark? You know, this design was revealed by God. And Noah didn't have to come up with the blueprint, and he didn't have to take it on a trial run to make sure this thing held up, stayed afloat. You know, God designed it to work, and Noah simply obeyed God. He did the building. The next, I think it was supernatural, was the gathering in of what into the ark? Would God take with him, or Noah take with him in the ark?
Yeah.
Okay, the animals. You know, I don't think Noah had to go out and have a big roundup for a year or so before, but it seemed like, I don't know, this is my idea or what I've read. It's, you know, the animals can sense a fear of impending doom. And, it seems like they just went to Noah. And maybe God put that in there. But it would appear the animals were not wild at that time. I think in Genesis 9:2 it says that God put a fear and a dread in the animals. And I think there was room for all. Some of the animals Noah took in, two of each kind, male and female. And then there were some that, I think there was at least seven, if I remember right. Okay, how many years did it take Noah to build the ark?
100.
Okay, do you have a reference for that?
Well, it was 500.
Okay. Well, it's a little hard to know exactly how long, and you're probably close to right. I think somewhere it mentions 120 years being the days of man, kind of right in there, Genesis 6:3. So it's kind of thought to be around 100 years, 120. But we don't know for sure, unless you have a reference there for it that says that. Well, I thought I read it too one place, and I couldn't find it. So, if you find, okay.
The 601st year.
Then it's Genesis 5:32 that says Noah was 500.
Okay. So it's kind of putting maybe two verses together that kind of. So it doesn't really say exactly this is so many years, but thank you for that. And then the other thing that was supernatural was the rainbow. I don't think they had ever seen a rainbow before that. It's a covenant sign. Well, we could talk a little more about that, but let's go on here. How big was Noah's Ark? Some of you, how many of you been to the Noah's Ark in, what is it, Kentucky? Well, you make me a little bit jealous. I've never been there. I've been at the Creation Museum, but that was before that was built. I hope it's not a bad jealousy. But you know what I mean. Well, it was very, very large. I'm sure as you stood beside that thing, it was mind-boggling. 450 feet long, 75 feet wide, 45 feet tall approximately. It had the capacity of 522 railroad cars. A football field is about 300 feet long, I think, and the ark was 150 feet beyond that. Likely, or it could have had three decks with a total of 95,000 square feet. Could have held as much as 43,000 tons. Is that enough room for all the animals? Well, I believe it was. And probably he didn't take on just the biggest animals he could find. It was probably the small ones, young ones. And we think of the massive dinosaurs that, and I don't think he took one of those on. I think the average size of a dinosaur could have been more like a dog or even a chicken, and especially when they're young. Reptiles grow, I think, all their life, and so the older they get, the bigger they get. I think that's still true. Anyway, could talk a little bit about the dimensions of Noah's Ark there. And I think a lot of shipbuilding is maybe a little bit different ratios, especially the ocean liners. They're designed to go for speed, and so they're a little slimmer. But there's different ships that were built close to what this design was, this ratio. You know, Noah's Ark was made for, not for speed. It was just a method of just being there. It had no propulsion, no engine, no sails, no rudder. It was simply designed to stay afloat without capsizing. So the Hebrew word for ark is what? Very simple word, just box. It had no deck on top where you could go out and relax at night. How did Noah take care of all these animals? Well, in Genesis 6:21, it says that he prepared food for the animals and for themselves. And you think about all these rooms that are compartments in that ship, probably didn't have much light, maybe no light. And you know, what do animals do when it's dark? Well, they probably hibernate, don't they? So they could have been at least in partial hibernation, we don't know. That would have probably taken a lot less feed, and Noah wouldn't have had to spend a lot of time just mucking out the stables all the time. Anyway, something to think about. Okay, how long were they on the ark? If you look at the bottom of your page, it kind of puts it simply there for you to understand. It's about 371 days, I think, to be exact. Does the ark exist today? Well, I simply don't know. I think there's been many, many expeditions. People have risked their lives trying to climb these mountains. And the problem is there's numerous mountains. There's a whole mountain range of Ararat. So which one is it and where? And not only that, they're snow-covered, they're glacier-covered, some of them. I think most parts of the year, maybe all parts of the year. Well, the question number 16, what impact do you think it would have on the general population if Noah's Ark was found? People just flock to churches and believe the Bible. Well, I'm not so sure if they would. I believe that Noah's Ark was there without them ever finding it. And I have faith that the Bible is true. In Luke 16:31, this is Abraham speaking to the rich man in hell. He says, if they don't believe Moses and the prophets, even if one was raised from the dead, they wouldn't believe anyway. So I don't know how much of an effect it would really have on the general population. Okay, does the Bible contain the only record of the flood? Well, according to one writer, he says there's over 200 legends, flood legends, in countries all over the world. And of course, most of them are a partial or a misrepresentation in many forms, or missing facts and misconstrued facts. Okay, discuss the length of life before the flood. You know, many of the people before the flood lived 700 to 900. I believe Methuselah almost made it to 1,000. I have a sheet here. To me, it's really fascinating. Try to keep my mark here. I know you can't see it from here, but that line is the flood. Methuselah was right up to the edge. Let's see, and this is Noah. Noah goes across it, of course. And that's Lamech. Methuselah was up here. But Methuselah could have talked to Adam. Did he? I don't know. But then Methuselah could have talked to Noah and told all about creation. Interesting to think about, anyway. That timeline is fascinating to me. According to Henry Morris, the name Methuselah means when he dies, judgment. And so he lived right up to the edge of the, almost to the flood. Well, another question we could ask, you know, why did they live so long? Well, I think without going into a lot of detail, the quick answer is basically genetics. And maybe the huge climate change afterwards, after the flood. That's a whole nother subject. Okay, after the flood, when they got off the ark, think about how the world had drastically changed. You know, the climate change, I believe. There's no other people out there. Just a few handful of animals. The earth was devastated. Never be the same. There's so much evidence in geology alone that, you know, it makes sense that the world was underwater. And I'm not sure if I have that down here, but even on Mount Everest, not just on the bottom, but toward the top, there's seashells. Where'd that ever come from? Okay, we'll talk now about some the next stage after the ark gets hung up there on dry land. In my book, I'm going backwards. Let's talk about geology, the geological column and fossils. So, what is geology? School children, what's geology? What do you study when you study geology? You study the sky? Okay. Geology is a study of the earth and the rocks from which it's composed. And it's a study of the changes that the earth has undergone. Okay, the earth's surface is made up of layers called what? What are those layers in the earth? You see them in the mountains around here. There's these layers that... Excuse me. Is it strata? Does that sound familiar? Can be a few inches thick. It can be a thousand or thousands of feet thick. Okay, what is a fossil? How is it formed? It's going to... How is a fossil formed? There's a fossil. A fossil means something dug up. But it's remains or the traces of something that was once living. Does the Bible talk about fossils? Well, I think it at least hints at it. In Job chapter 26, let's see here. I thought I had it written down. Well, I might have to read it. Job 26, verse 1 or 2, I think. No, it's actually verse 5. It says, dead things are formed from under the waters and the inhabitants thereof. So is that talking about fossils? Well, it could be. I'm sure Job would have had some experience with them, being shortly after the flood. Well, geology it's kind of fascinating to me. I know many scientists have spent their whole life just studying rocks. And there's three main different kinds of rocks, primary classes. The igneous is formed by cooling magma, which has flowed to the surface. An example would be basalt and granite. Sedimentary rock is composed of fragments of other rock, organic matter, biochemically produced materials. It's most common. It's about 75% of the continents and the ocean floor. Most of it's made out of sedimentary rock. And other examples would be shale, sandstone, layers of sand, limestone, flint, and coal. And then we have the metamorphic rocks, which... These rocks have been changed by high temperatures and pressures, such as slate and marble, diamonds, emeralds, all of your crystal-looking rocks. Okay, what is a fossil? It's remains or traces of once living organism. The study of fossils, what do you call that? People that study it. It's called paleontology. So if you're going to study rocks and fossils, you can be a paleontologist. Evolution requires transitional forms or missing links, where one kind of organism gradually changes into a more complex form or another, even in another species. And if evolution is true, there should be millions of transitional forms. You know, you should have these ape men that look almost like humans, and suddenly... another fossil comes and it's, well, here's a human. But you know, there has never been unquestionable missing links ever found. We hear about it from time to time, hey, we found it. And after a while, it pretty well goes quiet. And yet the geological column, and I think I have that right here. This is a very simple one. Geological column, where the simple or the primitive is down at the bottom. That's where you'd find in the lowest levels, lowest layers of the strata, where it continues to be more complex to get up to man. Well, let's talk a little bit about the trilobite that is supposed to be pretty primitive. And you don't have any Precambrian down here. There's none of that. This little guy, he's got an eye that's very, very complex. Evolution just doesn't like to hear that. But the problem, too, is that these layers, these animals, these things, these complex are found in the lower layers as well as all mixed up. But this has been taught for 150 years, and it's still being taught in our public schools. As far as I know, I haven't looked at a textbook lately, but that's what they want you to believe. But it doesn't go from simple to complex like they like to see it. Okay, I'd like to talk a little bit about the formation of oil and coal. We call those, what, fossil fuels? You hear that term all the time. It's a fossil fuel. So you think about oil. How do you get oil? If you have sunflowers, you want to make oil. How do you do it? You squeeze it, don't you? So it's oil is squeezed out of living things, and mostly algae and plankton. Well, underneath the ground in many different places of the world, this oil is trapped under there. And underground pools, there's billions and billions of gallons. And, you know, we can call it what we will, you know, Texas tea or black gold. But how in the world did it get trapped under there? You know, if you throw a plant that's full of oil onto water, the oil quickly disappears. And just think about the huge amount of plant life that it took for the oil to be under the earth today. And I don't know how it all got there, but I believe it happened during the flood. Somehow it was squeezed and we have all this oil. Scientists have calculated that if all the world's reserves of oil, they should have leaked to the surface in about 200,000 years. Well, real science makes faith in the Bible a lot easier, doesn't it? You know, it's still trapped there, and it's not just trapped, it's under great pressure. You know, they drill down, and then they have this gusher, and then they burn it off till the pressure gets a little less, and then they get the oil. Let's talk about coal just a little bit. Evolution claims that the coal was formed in swamps over millions of years ago. But today we have a coal deposit that runs from Pennsylvania to Kansas. That'd be a pretty big swamp, wouldn't it? And coal is found on all continents. It's even buried under the ocean floor. Some of it's 2 inches thick, some of it's 400 feet thick. Some have layers of other stuff between it. I think in one place in Pennsylvania, There's seven layers of coal in the mountains that go up one mountain and down to the valleys of the next. Obviously, these layers were laid down very quickly, and then the mountains were pushed up. And these layers are bent. They just kind of go with the flow. Excuse me. Much of the coal is made from extinct trees, and we know that trees don't grow in swamps, do they? At least not too much. Now, I find this interesting. You know, if all the vegetation in the world today were turned into coal, it would provide only about 10 to 20% of the known coal deposits. And we have evidence of the pre-flood world was very lush with huge plants. And we have many swamps today, and I don't see that there's too many making coal. Maybe backing up here. This is talking more about fossils now. Billions of fossils are found in the Earth's crust, and they're buried there since Noah's flood. Some of these fossils are extinct, and some of them are still living today, and we'll talk about some of those. But some of them can be much larger than their counterparts. You know, we're talking about like 40-foot crocs and 2,000-pound turtles, giant birds with 40-foot wingspans, eagle-sized dragonflies. That would be something to have buzzing around your head. 200-pound beavers, 600-pound saber-toothed cats, and not to mention the huge dinosaurs, the woolly mammoths. These fossils were formed, they were buried quickly before it deteriorates. You know what happens when a fish dies? It's like that fish, but it floats to the top. And what happens then? Well, it just disintegrates, or the birds eat them, or they're gone. So they had to be buried very, very quickly. And very few fossils are being formed today. Well, why not? Well, it takes a catastrophe, rapid burial. Another thing I find interesting is that about 95% of the fossils that we find around the world, what are they? Mostly shellfish or invertebrates. About 95%. And about 5% are plants and trees and algae. And about 1%, and I know this doesn't make 100%, but this approximate figures. 1% is animals, such as, well, any kinds of animals, from dinosaurs to the small ones. Okay, I'd like to talk a little bit about the living fossils. How can they be living? Well, extinct or unusual fossils are pressed into service as transitional forms. And I'd like to just talk about the coelacanth fish. There were many fossils of these fish that were found. It was thought to have been extinct. In fact, they were in rocks that they dated 70 million years old. These rocks are 70 million years old, so of course the fish has to be 70 million years too, right? And that was how long ago it was extinct. And they say it was first appeared about 350 million years ago, thought to be the closest relative of the first fish that came ashore and to live as an amphibian. So about 1938, lo and behold, someone happened to catch one. And this 70 million years old fish. And it was a fishing trawler off the eastern coast of South Africa captured this living coelacanth. And it shook the scientific world. You know, these fish live at a depth of about 650 to 2,000 feet down. And, you know, these fish, they still don't want to crawl on land. According to my encyclopedia, the modern coelacanth closely resembles its fossil relatives. Amazing. Little change in 350 million years. And this fish has many complex features, and it's exactly as God created it. One unusual thing for this fish is that the female gives birth to live fish, which I think there's other fish like guppies maybe do too. But oh, I thought there was something else here. Well, it had those fins on the bottom were pretty unusual looking fins. That's why they got the idea. They probably crawled out and land and evolved from there on. But another thing, researchers later learned that the people of the region had used this fish for many years. I guess it must be good eating. Another dinosaur fossil, you call it, was the Willamy pine. It was thought to be extinct for 50 million years. And in 1994, a group of these trees were found. I think there's about 100 of them together deep in the rainforest of Australia. And guess what? They're basically unchanged from 50 million years ago. From the fossil record, it was unchanged. One scientist said it was like finding a dinosaur. And now I think they're growing all over the world. I think you could probably have them in your yard if you'd like one. Maybe you could have pine grove all over. Well, let me pine. Well, again, we have a lot of circular reasoning going on, don't we? You know, it's kind of like this story of the farmer and the trying to guess the weight of the pig. You know, evolution is a process for interpreting the fossil record, and the fossil record, simple to complex, is the basis for establishing and identifying geological ages. You know, we can trust the scientists, can't we? Well, God is not the author of confusion. Looks like we have more time than I thought we would, but we could talk a little bit about the methods of dating. I'm not talking about courtship here. The method of dating these rocks, it's kind of a little beyond my head and a lot of this, but they use, one of the methods is carbon-14, and that's based upon the measurement of the radioactive element carbon-14 found in all living tissues, whether it's plants or animals or you. You have carbon-14 in you, especially if you're living. You have a lot of it. When the organism dies, carbon-14 begins to decay. And the less there is in those old rocks and things that are buried, well, they say that's the older it is. So they make assumptions. These methods have been tested on rock samples and other methods of dating these rocks. They did it on Mount St. Helens, that newly formed dome in 1986 after it blew its top in 1980. Some of you are old enough to remember that. These rocks were sent to a lab to test the age, and it came back with the range of 500,000 to 2.8 million years. And other rocks taken from volcanoes in New Zealand are less than 70 years came back to almost 0.27 to 3.5 million years old. So again, we have to have assumptions to think old. So these beginning assumptions are really a problem that skews the outcome. Again, it's that circular reasoning. Well, there's many other methods that they use: radiometric, radioisotope dating. It's just to mention a few. Well, I think that's about it for this evening. I do have a few verses that I would like to end up on. So we think about Genesis chapter 9, God's promise there that there will never, ever be a worldwide flood again to destroy the earth. Well, we know there's been a lot of local floods since that time, a lot of destruction. But there's never, ever going to be another global flood. But as Peter writes there, if I didn't read on there, but there is still another global catastrophe that's still ahead. And it could happen very soon. 2 Peter 3:7, but the heavens and the earth which are now by the same word are kept in store, reserved unto fire, against the day of judgment, perdition of ungodly men. So there is a judgment that is coming yet on the whole earth. Peter says, there's going to be scoffers. Where's the promise of his coming? Everything's just going on just like it was for millions and millions of years. But Peter says they're willingly ignorant. There was a global judgment and a world that perished by water. 2 Peter 3:10, but the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which heaven shall pass away with a great noise, the elements shall melt with fervent heat. The earth also and the works that are therein shall be burned up. So what God has promised, that is what God's going to do. But he has promised that there will be a new heaven and a new earth. So tonight, are you ready for that coming of the Lord? Let's be waiting and ready for him, because the day of the Lord will come. May the Lord bless each one. Oh, I was going to mention, I do have a box of fossils if you want to paw through them. I would ask that you not touch that one. I paid a few shekels for that one. So these, you can look at them if you'd like. Thank you.